This week, the Western Winds is in concert. It's a special ensemble at Western Michigan University that puts top-level students side-by-side with faculty members in one group. And Dr. Scott Borma is here to talk about the concert, along with graduate assistant horn player Alexandra Mattson. So welcome, both of you.
Thanks. Good morning.
Thank you.
Let's remind listeners that the concert is Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. And it looks like this is on the BPI series.
Correct. So. Yeah, so there will be an interview at 7 o'clock before to learn about the music we're playing and what Western Winds is all about. And Dr. Bob White does that. It's very fascinating.
There are pieces on this program that feature new works by like Eddie Codrington's Archangel Suite for tenor saxophone and piano, but I am seeing a lot of focus on the brass section.
Yes.
Here, so this is a celebration of the brass talent at Western Michigan University.
Yep. And we're opening with a piece that I don't know how many performances it's gotten so far, not very many, because it's known as a brass quintet piece mainly, Michael Tilson Thomas's Street Song. And in that same year, he also decided to write it for a 12-piece brass ensemble. So it's Street Song for Symphonic Brass. And it's a really compelling, beautiful work. It's got all kinds of different styles and changes and shapes and colors. But it's quite a tough piece for the brass. It's given us a run for our money.
Michael Tilson Thomas is a famous conductor.
Right.
I didn't really know he was an active composer at all.
Right. Yeah, he's written some really great things, but he's known mainly as the music director for the San Francisco Symphony. He's got some great music. I often compare him to Leonard Bernstein in a way. He kind of is a jack of all trades. He dabbles in a lot of different musical venues instead of just focusing on one part of his craft.
He studied with both Bernstein and Copland, I think.
Right, yep.
So he really knows.
And Ingolf Dahl was a composer of his, which I think also led him to liking to writing for winds. Ingolf Dahl is known for a famous band piece called the Sinfonietta.
So you said that this piece brings together lots of different styles. Would you say American styles or also Western European styles?
I think mainly American. It's got a lot of jazz influence in it, and like the title suggests, you kind of imagine yourself on the streets of New York someplace, and things happening in the bustle of the city, or the jazz in a nightclub, or just a song of a soprano saxophone up on top of a skyscraper. But of course, it's played by a flugelhorn.
Now, why would a busy conductor stop to write a brass quintet? I'm assuming he was.
You know, I don't even remember. I don't even know if I know who he wrote it for. But I'm sure somebody asked him to write it for some ensemble.
He wouldn't just wake up one day and say,
"Right,
no, that's it for the symphony. I'm going
right.
to write a
yeah,
brass."
Yeah, exactly.
Alexandra, are you playing in this Street Song for Brass? Are you part of the ensemble for this?
I am. Yes, I am one of four horn players that is in that piece.
So, how many in the group would you say for this? Expanded?
For this piece, it's 12 people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So quintet times, well,
yeah,
two quintets,
double plus a little bit.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, since I don't know you yet, Alexandra, would you tell us a little about how you came to Western Michigan University to study, where you grew up and started playing the horn?
Sure, yeah. So I am originally from Northern Virginia. I grew up about 45 minutes away from D.C. And then I did my undergraduate work down at Virginia Commonwealth University, which is in Central Virginia in the capital, Richmond. I started playing the horn in sixth grade. I went to my fifth grade band instrument testing night, and I was deciding between the flute and the horn. And I decided to go with the swirly one. That's what I remember calling it. It has since become more complex in my eyes. I grew up in a traditional band system. And like I said, I did my undergraduate work at VCU. And then I started looking for brass quintet assistantships. Brass quintet was the thing that I was really interested in my undergraduate work. And Western Michigan was actually one of the few places that had an assistantship that offered brass quintet work within it. I'm also very lucky because in addition to doing brass quintet work here, I also get to play in the woodwind quintet, the graduate woodwind quintet. So yeah, I was looking for assistantships. I found Western. I came and visited, and it became very apparent that this was a fabulous group of people that I wanted to study with and I wanted to be around. So
your professor would be Lynn Folk Baird?
Correct. Yes.
Who's an outstanding horn player herself, has
absolutely
in certain ways kind of advanced the field of horn playing through her exploration of improvisation in classical styles.
And, absolutely. Yeah. And especially with all of her emphasis on studying women composers as well. She's been very influential in bringing that to light. So I'm very lucky to be studying with her and especially playing with her in the Western Winds ensemble.
I imagine by now you've had to write pieces of your own as part of your coursework here and there.
not so much. Composition isn't a huge part of what I'm doing. But I earlier this year, as part of our studio class, our horn studio class, we had to compose a natural horn piece. So that was one thing that I did earlier this year, which is very fun.
It gives you insight into the pieces that you are preparing to perform. What do you think of this Michael Tilson Thomas work from back in 1988, Street Song for Brass?
Sure. I think it's fabulous. It's really, really interesting because I knew it originally in the brass quintet form. And I actually didn't know before I started playing this with Western Winds that it had been composed for a 12-piece brass ensemble. So that was really cool to learn. It is very interesting and kind of challenging in ways because in the quintet version, the horn part is playing more of a soloistic line. And in this brass ensemble version, the horn part has been split into four different parts. So that's been very fun to really put together. And it really, like I said, it's been challenging for us to just put that all together and sound like one cohesive horn.
I think of note is the second movement that has this leaping sixth. But and you're playing it on your one part, it's tough. But when what he will take it, he'll have one of the parts go beedle dee da ba dee da dee, and the other one will go dee do dee da ba dee da dee. So when you put them all together, and it kind of simulates the original melody, but adds more harmony and complexity to it. But it takes incredible counting and timing and putting it together with all four parts. It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, it is, and it's been a great experience just getting to do that with these folks.
Here's a great time to stop and listen to a recording of the Street Song. And I think we'll be listening to Movement 1. A reminder that this is a concert by the Western Winds that we are discussing today with Dr. Scott Borma and graduate assistant Alexandra Mattson. And the concert again is Wednesday at 7:30 p.m., part of the BPI series. This is a ticketed event. You can get tickets at the door or through the MillerAuditorium.com box office. Well, forgive me, I seem to have some technical difficulties with our equipment, getting this piece that Scott provided to play through our board here. So, well, I mean, Scott was singing it.
I could just keep scatting through this interview.
A little bit. But I would perhaps recommend that people keep that in their imagination and plan on being there on Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. to hear the Street Song of Michael Tilson Thomas. It's a 1988 work for symphonic brass, originally in a five-part piece and then expanded to 12. Mm-hmm. The Western Winds, as we mentioned, is a side-by-side student and faculty group. And one of the great things about it is there are so many configuration possibilities.
Right. Like
in the past, you've chosen concertos for fuller groups and lots of different pieces that can really showcase mostly winds. Yeah.
Yeah, and there are a lot of great music from the late 1800s that were designed specifically for wind ensembles that of a very specific orchestration, either octets or dectets. And so there's a wealth of great music for that. But in modern times, more and more composers are writing some pretty fascinating pieces that incorporate all kinds of different instruments. We'll get some saxophones sometimes, we'll get some euphoniums sometimes, and different combinations of woodwinds with brass. And so it's a great time to have wind ensembles, because there's really a wealth to choose from out there.
Mm-hmm. Before we went on the air, you mentioned a piece of yours had been premiered in the state recently.
Oh, yeah. last week on Thursday night, it was kind of a fun little adventure. Typically, when I'm asked to write a piece, somebody asked me to write a band work or wind ensemble work for whatever. You're usually celebrating something, or unfortunately, oftentimes mourning somebody, the loss of somebody, and will ask to have a piece written to commemorate or to honor. But this particular one was an interesting one for the Livonia Churchill High School. They just opened a new auditorium, renovated and opened a brand new auditorium. So they wanted something that would feature their entire music program in one big fell swoop. So it was we had the band, we had the string orchestra, we had the choir, and they even brought in the marching band for the last strains of things. And so it was fun, and they also wanted it to incorporate kind of hints to motives from their fight song and their alma mater. And so it's kind of a feel-good thing at the end of a concert to put it all together and hear the choir, hear the strings, hear the marching band and the band. And for me, it was a little bizarre, because their fight song is the Victors, the University of Michigan fight song, and my previous gig was the marching band director at the University of Michigan, so I kind of knew that tune.
Awfully well. Yeah, it's in the DNA, I would find.
Yeah, right.
We just got some assistance from our lovely engineer, Martin Clem, and I think I will try again now to play some of this music by Michael Tilson Thomas, and if not, I'm going to grill Alexandra Mattson more about why chamber music playing. So think about that while I see what I can do here. There we go. Well, I'm so glad we got to hear some of the Michael Tilson Thomas Street Song for Symphonic Brass. And were we listening to the larger version?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think and I just stumbled upon the recording the other day. I think it's the only recording that's out there of it.
Mm-hmm. My guests, if you just tuned in, are Dr. Scott Borma, Director of Bands at Western Michigan University, and Alexandra Mattson, who is a graduate assistant horn player, studies with Lynn Folk Baird, and has been focused on chamber music as part of her graduate studies. Mm-hmm. You already knew going into grad school that you're happiest in a chamber setting? Is
yes.
that what you're saying?
Absolutely, yes.
What is so special about chamber music?
For me, the special thing about chamber music is that I get to work really closely with a small group of people, and we get to just really experiment with both the music that we're playing, but also just experiment as musicians together. And that's really easily, it's easily accomplished in a chamber group, just because in a quintet setting, you know, you're only having to play with four other people. So that really gives you an opportunity, like I said, to experiment with music and just musically with each other. And also in most chamber settings, there's not a conductor present as well. So that gives a lot of flexibility for us as musicians to really make the music what we want it to be.
So you're telling me there's something wrong with conductors?
No, absolutely not. And for a piece like the Michael Tilson Thomas piece, having a conductor there is essential. So,
but I should say that, well, that was a nice answer, Alexander. You know, what I try to do with Western Wind, since it's typically smaller ensembles than what I would conduct with a big band or, you know, somebody would conduct it with an orchestra, we find ourselves as conductors in front of 60, 80 musicians. And there's no room for all the instrumentalists to play a part in the discussion about what we're going to do or how we're going to turn this phrase or what tempo we're going to take or who we need to listen to. Mm-hmm. It kind of is all driven by the conductor just out of necessity. And so I try to set up an environment with Western Winds that is collaborative, that people have the opportunity to make comments. And it oftentimes ends up being the professors that are making those comments just because, you know, they're used to that, you know?
Yeah.
But I really enjoy that aspect of this where I'm basically their tour guide, and I'm the one interpreting phrases and directions and dynamics and tempos and things like that. But as far as who they're listening to and how they're going to combine, they get to interact and speak up, and it's not all just being delivered from the conductor, and I really enjoy that process.
So a lot of the ideas are suggestions from players,
right.
And
mm-hmm.
you
yep.
incorporate that into your mm-hmm. conducting.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's something really valuable as a graduate student to see, you know, the collaboration between a conductor and professional musicians who, you know, have been in the field for a long time, and just getting to learn from them and watching that interaction, it's invaluable.
So the downside of being in a group of five people is that there are conflicts. It may not seem like having a conflict over how to play a phrase is that serious.
Mm.
Unfortunately, it can just be like from the core of your being.
Yeah, right. In that moment,
yes.
It's very serious.
Yes, it can be.
So these challenges must happen from day one.
Sure.
So tell me a lesson you've learned about how to handle interpersonal communication with four other people,
sure.
and make it turn out better than it was.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, I played in a brass quintet all throughout my undergrad, and I'm continuing quintet work here. And the biggest thing that I've learned is just to set up, before you even start playing music together, is to set up a rapport with one another. Get to know the people that you're playing with and know them as humans before you know them as a musician. It sounds cliche almost, but it's really important, you know, because sometimes we forget that we're playing with other humans. You know, we are musicians, but we're people first. So just setting up that relationship with one another beforehand. So that way when conflicts do come up, which they always do, you're able to maybe look past your musical differences and understand that you're both trying to work towards the same thing, which is to create, you know, an aesthetically pleasing musical product. So, yeah.
That's a good lesson to have.
Absolutely, yes. And it takes time, you know, and each group of people that you play with is different. So setting up that rapport with one another, that'll look different with each group that you play with, each person you play with. So
this concert starts with the Street Song for Symphonic Brass by Michael Tilson Thomas. We've been focusing on that piece, and we may still hear another movement, but I do want to point out some of the other works on the program at this point. And the work that follows is for five players, and it features the Graduate Wind Quintet.
Yes, so we will be performing the first and the second movement of Erica Wazin's Roaring Fork Quintet for Wind Instruments. And this is a piece that I stumbled upon before I even got to Western, and I presented it to my wind quintet, and they fell in love with it, just like I had. And it's very picturesque, and it describes the Roaring Fork River Valley in Colorado. And Erica Wazin has just painted these pictures beautifully for us. The first movement is entitled Whitewater Rapids, and just he writes in his program notes that the point of this was the rhythmic energy, and you can really, you know, feel and hear the rapids. And the second movement that we'll also be performing is called Columbines, and it's about Snowmass Lake, and it's a very calm, serene movement. And you can really, you know, feel like you're sitting there right in front of the lake, you know, seeing all of these beautiful white columbine flowers, and it's just absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I feel like Erica Wazin has run the risk his entire career of not being cool because he writes picturesque, descriptive, exciting music.
Right.
And yet he's accepted throughout the composing world. He's an instructor at Juilliard and as a really nice fellow when you meet him, which I did years ago. And that's almost a contradiction. Like, he's not cool, and he's not doing these cutting edge things, but he's like one of the most treasured composers we have instrumental music. Yeah.
And there's an excerpt of one of his a symphony for brass that we hear on NPR quite often that leads into political
Yeah, that's
things,
no
right?
accident. I include that in our music bed library. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that an NPR thing or a WMUK thing?
It's a WMUK
I always hear it on the radio, and I always wonder what the...
It's from the Western Michigan University recording.
Oh, fantastic.
Of a shadow catcher.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, that was
an aside.
An aside. Erica Wazin's Roaring Fork quintet is followed by, and it features Pablo Sanchez on flute, Marcus Jackson oboe, Jacob Murfin clarinet, Alexander Mattson horn, and Ashley Watkins bassoon. You are all graduate assistants?
Four of us are. Marcus, our oboe player, is actually an undergraduate, and we're very fortunate to have him playing with us. He's a wonderful addition. Even though he's not doing the assistantship like the rest of us, we're still so lucky to have him.
Will this be the first occasion this school year that the Graduate Wind Quintet takes the stage in front of a public audience?
Yes, it will be. So we're very excited about that.
Okay. Well, the concert again is 7:30 on Wednesday, and I thought we would maybe listen to more. I think we have time for some Michael Tilson Thomas.
Great.
Okay. Final movement?
Sure. I wish we could play the whole thing, but that sounds great. That'll be jazzy and up-tempo and fun.
Yes.
We're listening to music of Michael Tilson Thomas. What a treat. It's a three-movement work called Street Song, which this famous conductor wrote in 1988, and it's being revived here at Western Michigan University and opening the concert Wednesday night in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. The Western Winds will be the performing ensemble led by Dr. Scott Borma, and in the group is graduate assistant horn player Alexandra Mattson, who is also in the wind quintet, playing music of Eric Uwazin next on the program. And then after that, we hear music of one of Western's own graduate students.
Right. Yeah, we were talking during the playing that I try to program something, I don't know if unusual is the right term, but something, the diversion in the middle of our program each time. And I was talking to Professor Andrew Rathbun, and he was talking about his graduate student, Eddie Codrington, is writing some really compelling music, and thought that this would be a great opportunity to have him involved, since saxophones don't typically appear in a lot of the chamber winds music that we play. Mm-hmm. So I thought it would be a perfect idea to have a tenor saxophone player, and his Grayson Nye is playing piano on this. It's a piece called, that he titles The Archangel Suite. He's doing one movement from that, Raphael, and I have not heard it yet. It's a student composition, and I'm sure it's going to have jazz influence to it, so it should provide a real nice change in the middle of our program.
All right. Well, when you do run into Eddie Codrington, you have to ask him for me about the title. It's
okay, yeah,
Archangel,
it's right.
Suite, and first movement is called Raphael, so I assume that it's a larger set of pieces,
yeah, right.
with
mm-hmm.
different archangels named,
yep. mm-hmm.
in it. Eddie Codrington and Grayson Nye are both founding members of a jazz fusion group called Lush, which started a couple years ago at Western Michigan University and has really done splendidly as a performing group in Kalamazoo and well beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Cliff Bells in Detroit, and so while they're continuing their studies, they're getting lots and lots of stage mm-hmm. time.
Absolutely.
Probably rehearsal. I bet they know all about Alexandra, the interpersonal respect and how to get your ideas across.
Right, yeah.
Absolutely, yes.
So we'll hear from Eddie Codrington and Grayson Nye, both of Lush, with an original piece by Codrington on the program. And then it continues with music of David Sampson, who is an American composer, yes?
Yes. Yeah, he's from Virginia and has written music of all kinds for all kinds of ensembles. And he's doing some great music for winds. I got to meet him a few years ago in my previous position as the Associate Director of Bands at the University of Michigan. He wrote a piece for my colleague Amy Porter, the flute professor there, and it's called Undercurrents, and he came to campus and we were able to interact and hear his music there. So I was glad to see it come up on the program. The quintet chose this piece, and I think it's a fun piece. It's got a lot of, it's called Chicago Moves, and all these different Chicago references in the various movements, Grant Park, the Spaghetti Bowl, Loop Lament, and Lakeshore Drive.
Sounds like a classic Chicago piece.
Alexandra's also playing, and she's not playing in that piece. The other horn player, the other horn graduate assistant, Zach Nicely, is playing in that. But Alexandra and I were talking earlier that as a horn player, the good news is you get to play in everything. The bad news is you have to play in everything. So, because the woodwind ensembles have horns, the brass mm-hmm. ensembles have horns, so Lynn Folk Baird is all over the place playing in lots of things, and so they get a lot of experience, but boy, playing the horn on that tiny little mouthpiece, it's a lot of a lot of time. These Western Winds ensembles, we have two major works on the program, and they both involve all the horn players. And mm-hmm. so everybody else got three 1-hour rehearsals. The horn players got six in the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
And part of the whole design of Western Winds is to have just three very short rehearsals under an hour, and then a dress rehearsal and the performance, kind of simulating a professional situation where the expectation is they truly show up to that first rehearsal performance ready on their individual part, and then our job is to put it together and make something out of it. So they've been quite busy the last 2 weeks, the horn players especially.
Sure.
Back when you said you chose between flute and a French horn, or it's just horn these days.
Sure.
I thought to myself, you chose the right instrument because the horn itself can actually be so perfectly played that you can sound like a flute.
Absolutely.
At times. Mm-hmm. The dynamic range is huge.
Sure.
From triple pianissimo to great, you know, hunting horns.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's such a flexible instrument.
Yeah, it's a super unique thing that we get to do. We get to play in a completely two different styles with woodwinds, and then when we play with brass, they're just very different from each other, and just being able to do that, no other instrument gets.
And the range of the instrument, from really low sounds to just brilliant high music. And
we're basically responsible for four octaves.
Right.
So how come you guys never use like vibrato?
Good question.
That is a good question. Some of the horn players in the mid-20th century, some of them were doing it in various solo recordings. But it's kind of been generally just not accepted in our community. I'm not quite sure why, but we're not a huge fan of it. Lip trills we love, but vibrato not so much.
Yeah, so like you the and clarinet.
Yeah,
the clarinets
you
also.
And the clarinets are in the same club together.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Disdaining vibrato. Well, you know, another brilliant player will come along and change all of that. They'll be imitating.
Well, we were also talking earlier, Alexander and I, about how a lot of horn players are exploring jazz. And Alexander was telling me about who was the person that you were talking about?
Julius Watkins. He was a rather famous jazz horn player in the 1940s. And he was touring the country with many of the top big bands at the time, playing on a traditional horn. It wasn't anything special. It wasn't a specific jazz instrument, but he was absolutely incredible at the time. But for whatever reason, jazz horn never really took off, and the art kind of died with him, if you will. I mean, there have been other jazz horn players, but he was really an original, if you will.
My former colleague at the University of Michigan, Adam Unsworth, the horn professor there, plays a lot of jazz and also uses a lot of vibrato when it's appropriate. So it's just interesting to hear how versatile the instrument is.
Absolutely.
I'm speaking with two wonderfully experienced musicians, Dr. Scott Borma and graduate assistant Alexandra Mattson, and we're here to preview Wednesday night's concert on the Bullock Performance Institute series by the Western Winds. You'll see ensembles down to two people and as big as 12.
Correct.
On the program, a nice mix of graduate assistant players as well as faculty members. And we've had a look now at most of the program. What remains is sort of a throwback, I'm guessing, because this composer goes back to the 19th century.
Right. This is the oldest work on the program. Everything else is 20th century. And it's an interesting piece. Emil Hartmann is a Danish composer, and his father was a very famous Danish composer. He kind of always lived in his shadow. So he kind of got known for being in Germany. He kind of left Copenhagen. He was in Denmark and spent some time in Germany and became famous in Germany and then went back home. But this piece that we're going to play, his serenade, is the only piece we know of that he wrote just for winds. And the word is that the premiere was not highly regarded. And I think I have a quote here that said it was called safe, dull, and bland. Well over 100 years later, it is far from safe, dull, and bland. It's really a difficult work with some really compelling changes, four movements of a lot of contrasting styles. Mm. And it's a
four
fun
movements
piece.
Like you're playing a symphony.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a lengthy work, over 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. By Emil Hartmann, and that era, that sound, it's something familiar to us now, and yet it's sort of might be like discovering a piece by Brahms or Dvorak, or
Well, and in the late 1800s, I'm glad you brought up Dvorak. Dvorak has a famous serenade of his own written for harmony music, wind instruments. There was a little bit of a revival at that time of that kind of music being written. In the late 1700s, Mozart is famous for this. Many of the classical composers were writing for wind instruments. And then it kind of went away for a while, and about 100 years later, it became in vogue to make that happen. And this piece kind of resurfaced somewhat recently. It wasn't being played a lot, and now it's being played quite often.
Well, we have time now to hear the entire first movement.
Terrific.
Of this Serenade Opus 43, but first a little round of thank yous. Thank you, Scott, and thank you, Alexandra, for previewing this concert. And if you had any reminders or last thoughts for Wednesday, please share them now. Alexandra.
Mm. We're just, all of the graduate assistants, we're just very fortunate and lucky to be playing with our professors and being conducted by Dr. Borma. So please come out and see this fabulous concert. It's a lot of really great music. And yeah, thank you so much.
And don't miss the interview at 7 o'clock prior. Dr. Robert White will give a little pre-concert talk, and then the concert starts at 7:30.
Very good. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.